Good evening, friends. As was announced, appropriate to this season among the Zoroastrians, who are now observing five sacred days, named after the five gathas of Zarathustra. The only real authentic teaching that have been extant available to present humanity. And at the end of those 5 days, that is supposed to be the New Year's Day, which falls on Tuesday. So in reverence to this great teacher of humanity, we have taken up this subject, the Zoroastrian view of life, which is based on the Zoroastrian philosophy of life. Now, why should in the theosophical forum a topic of this kind is taken? It is because among the three objects with which theosophical movement was initiated, the first being universal brotherhood of humanity. The second object, a very important and a practical object, in order to support that prime object, brotherhood of religions was necessary, and for which a comparative study of religions, and H.P.B., Madame Blavatsky, the founder, adds, and especially Zoroastrianism, Brahminism and Buddhism, those ancient archaic teachings, making a comparative study with an object to find out the essential truths therefrom, which are largely metaphysical as well as ethical, and which are found surprisingly to be identical to the great teachings of the ancient great teachers of humanity. So as the previous teacher or speaker mentioned, that there is a great long line of elder brothers of humanity who are pledged to look after the spiritual welfare of humanity, and they descend from time to time whenever the cycle demands it, especially during the dark cycles where there is too much of darkness around and humanity needs some enlightenment. So this, in line with that tradition of this parampara of great teachers among the elder brothers, they are called elder brothers of humanity. They call themselves the elder brothers of humanity. One of them, the great one, was Zarathustra. And another object of the comparative study was to discriminate, to learn to discriminate the soul of religion and the outward shell. Mostly the outward shell appeals to ordinary minds or regular men in the street, because it is easy to understand, number one, and because easy to practice, number two, and because it is being easy, it creates some kind of laziness. Because to go to the very essence of the teaching requires some kind of a mystical mind. So what has happened to the fate of Zoroastrianism? And by the way, which Zoroastrianism? The word, nowadays we are now using the word Zarathustrianism, because Zoroastrianism is a word coined by the Greeks, Zarathustra. The Greeks who were coined it as the earlier translators of the original Avesta works. So now we have to question which religion, which Zarathustra's religion you would like to understand or study, which we will like to take up. As we rightly said, we go directly to the original teacher, the original founder. And real great scholars of Zoroastrianism, especially who are mystically inclined, have affirmed that it is better, if you want to quote from Zarathustra, it is better to go directly to the gathas, because they are the holy songs, a kind of a rhyme. It's almost similar to Bhagavad Gita in the sense that there is some kind of a dialogue between Zarathustra and Avramasya at times. And Tarapurvala, one of the great writers to whom we refer now and then, very beautifully states in his concluding chapter, As with all faiths, the message of Zarathustra in the purest form, is found in his earliest presentation. That is, in the Gathas themselves, which are the original very words of the founder. And the proof, and he gives the proof, that the Avastha of the Gatha antedates even the Avastha of a later period. There have been 72 Yasnas, which are given out in the ancient, in the Iranian traditions. Of those 72, the 17 ones belong to the Gatha, and the language seems to prove that they were predated. Previous, before the later Yasnas, and Yasna means Yajna, or used in ceremonial practices and litanies. This pristine purity continued during the very days of his immediate disciples. But in later ages, when even though the messenger was venerated, the purity of the message was forgotten. This happens to almost every religious tradition. Later followers had other and more selfish and more worldly motives, and they clung to the letter and literal words of the message to suit their purpose. There were also influences, such as that of the Greek, the Judaic and the Christian, from outside Iran, which molded popular beliefs and customs. Thus, the original Zoroastrian faith in later ages was clearly different from the earlier faith of the Gathas. That is the reason. We have no apology to make, since we will refer to the Gatha from the beginning and to the end. Now, as we just mentioned, that every religion in its pristine beginning begins with the great teacher, an avatar of a highest stature or a minor teacher who is actually comes as a reformer. People call him a prophet because he does prophecy things and he does reveal things which have been forgotten. That is, he brings back people and reminds them of their old ancient culture. And to that extent he comes as a reformer at a time when people need reforming. And therefore, he has to confront opposition. So in the history of all great teachers, there have always been conflicts and opposition from all sides, particularly from the priestly class, because priestly class have a vested interest in continuing with the religious practices, superstition which were later added, and so on. So again, therefore, we have to choose which Zarathustra we are going to embrace. And this may be in the light of Zoroastra, in the light of occult teaching, occult philosophy, in our pamphlet, which is supposed to be an article in the Theosophist of old in the year 1884. This was in response to a letter by a Parsi gentleman putting certain questions. At that time, secret doctrine was not available. But he put questions which almost bordered on the study of secret doctrine. And Ishpibis was answer to that. And in that, she writes, this is that in your hand. All the religions from the old Vedic, Zoroastrian and the Jewish creeds down to the modern Christianity sprang from the archaic Magianism, which is pre-Zarathustra Mazda Yasmi doctrine, pre-Zarathustra. Of the ancient or the ancient wisdom based upon knowledge of the occult nature. So this is HPB's article, is form of pamphlet available, Zoroastrianism in the Light of Occult Philosophy. So in view of this, as we said, that it is in a pure form during his lifetime, he passes on to his close disciples, and it happens that usually the apostles who come immediately after the teacher continue to preserve the teaching, keep collecting the original records, put them in writing, take great pains, spread out at some places in order to spread the original teaching and so on. But then later on, the whole thing gets into a creed. Once it becomes an organized religion, any teacher who begins as a freelance teacher, once around him an organization takes place, a kind of an ashram, then people start collecting and then it becomes so unmanageable that a real modern system of management has to be brought in. And with the result that whenever an organized religious institution like the church, there again becomes the hierarchies, the personality, the one on the top, the pope, the leader, the man, the highest priest and so on. So politicalization of the religion starts taking place. Finances are heavily collected. Then those great popes are king makers and king breakers. They have got such a power. The religion becomes a state religion and the whole thing gets over it. And much later, you see, missionaries go out and create their own little cults around the same original teaching. The original spirit by that time is almost lost. But Yashvabhi says, and we shall end with that last statement, that the original spirit of the mega is still existing, still breathing in the decaying and the dying community. She uses the word, unfortunately, that time, huh? More than 120 years ago, that it is a dependent state of a community. Now coming to the, yes, we said that the way of life has to be understood in the light of the philosophy. And the philosophy of life is always based on fundamental teachings of the great teacher. And we have taken up among many, among four, five or six of them, we have chosen three of them. The three important doctrines is that Rathusha took great pains to subsist. The very first sermon that he gave was on the doctrine of the twin spirit, which is an aspect of the one universal principle of life, the one unity, the one united spirit of life, which, and its two very aspects, this which he calls this Penta Menu and Amrita Menu. This is the doctrine we shall speak at length in order to understand the just and the other. The other doctrine is the doctrine of the nature of Asha, the cosmic law. And the third doctrine is the doctrine of the seven emanations. The seven, later on they were called Amesha's Pentas, or the holy mortals, representing the seven parameters. And of course that also to do with the doctrine of evolution. So this is as the basis. We shall go now directly to the teaching on the Zoroastrian, the doctrine of twin doctrine. These twin doctrines are what are called the twin spirits, Spanta Mainyu and Angra Mainyu. The word Mainyu from mana or intelligence. They are the fundamental intelligent powers which sustain the whole universe. They were the first to manifest out of that prime yogas, Mazda Aura. By the way, in Gatha, most of the time Rathusha uses the word Mazda Aura, and rarely he uses the word Aura Mazda. And later on, a lot of pundits have quarreled on those words, how, why this way and why that way, and the meaning of the word Mazda and the meaning of the detailed discussion have taken place. But ultimately it comes to that one Ishvara, the Logos, and it corresponds to this Vedic teaching of spirit and matter, light and darkness, two cycles of the one periodicity, the one periodicity which takes place within that one primal, endless time, Jarvame Akkan. So these two apparently opposite poles actually are co-workers. And we shall soon go to the reading. They are actually co-workers and they serve the purpose of manifestation and of evolution. I think we go to the reading itself. This is the second reading. This is, as we said, the first sermon, the first four shlokas of which second and third we have taken. Now in the beginning were these twin spirits. As co-workers, they reveal themselves at the dawn of manifestation. That is even before man came in the scene. Yet, in each human thought, now this is at a cosmic level. Now at human level, in each human thought, they manifest in thought, words and deeds, these two show themselves, that is manifest, as conflict of good and evil tendencies. Then he adds, the wise rightly do choose, the unwise go astray. So the choice is immediately placed before the people. That now you have to choose between the two. And later on he says, do not accept my words as an authentic words. Apply your mind, think over it, and choose for yourself the right path. But having chosen, don't turn back. And then he, in the next paragraph he says, and when the twin spirits did foregather at creation's early dawn, and create at first life and non-life. This is that spirit and matter element. Serving creation's purpose. Dark is the mind that clings to the false, but brightly shines the mind that holds the truth. This is the very first Avinavati Gatha. So, friends, it appears that this introduction, the two aspects of that one cosmic unity, which later on, much later on, you see, was described as a conflict between Avramas and Arama. Avramasda himself is above these two, untouched by these two. In fact, he is the author of these two. He is the foundation upon which these two are based. That two are merely an aspect during manifestation of the same one reality, and therefore he is above them. And yet, when Avramasda is translated as Avramas later in Pahlavi tradition, and against whom Ariman, the lower mind, the conflict. So there is rather a conflict between Avramasda and the upper mind. This is degeneration. Philosophically, it is what led to what is known as the doctrine of dualism. Now, dualism is misunderstood because twin doctrine on one side at a cosmic level, but at human level, as said, the conflict of good and the evil in man himself, and for which the words are used. He used the Akomano and Vahumano. The Vahumano, the higher mind, and the lower mind. And this is the most important theosophical doctrine, what is called the dual mind or dual man. The man has got the two sides always, the higher, which is what is called the heaven aspiring mind. The mind which aspires towards the higher things of life, which comes spontaneously to him because already in him the central spark, the divine fire is burning in him, which goads him, which inspires him towards that light, which calls out to him to come towards that light. On the other hand, that is the pool of the earth, matter, materiality, earthliness, which is considered as akomano, the reverse mind, the mind which is dark with selfishness, chaos, and the word darkness represents ignorance. So this conflict is represented in mythologies as a conflict between the great powers of the dark and the great powers of the white. And most of the mythologies, you see, there is confrontation between Krishna and Kamsa, Rama and Ravana, and of course Zarathustra and Turbaratu. This kind of conflict are merely mythological or representation of the actual historical conflict that is taking place right here and now within every human heart, but then a culmination takes place. So this is where Zarathustra comes in the picture, because he was dealing with the problem of evil. You know why he introduced this topic? Because he wanted to explain the problem of evil. Why evil is there in the world? And by the way, in our theosophical tradition, we have got pamphlet number 7, Avramas and Ariman, and the doctrine of evil. This is pamphlet number 7 and number 26. You can find them on the book table. Now the problem of evil, he explains through these two cycles, that there are cycles of darkness and there are cycles of light. And during the dark cycles, a great one has to take birth. And you have a parallel statement from the Bhagavad Gita. That is why you have chosen that teaching from that chapter. I produce myself, it is there on page 31 in the middle. I produce myself among creatures, O son of Bharata. Whenever there is a decline of virtue and an insurrection of vice and injustice in the world, and thus I incarnate from age to age, it's not for the first time, I incarnate from age to age for the preservation of the just, the destruction of the wicked, and very important, and the establishment of righteousness of dharma. This dharma is this doctrine of Asham. We shall go to it a little later. But then, in this conflict within the mind, most of the Russian teaching is dealing with human mind. See that Bahumano, or Bhumata, Bhukhata, and Bhuvarasta, Bhumanasni, Bhugavasni, and Bhukunasni, everywhere when he speaks, he begins with mind. Good thought, good words, and good deeds. Because thought, deeds and words are secondary, or mainly the outcome of the central thought foundation. So the conflict, as we said, is in the mind, and therefore the remedy also is in the mind of man. So the evil, therefore, begins when the mind of man came in the scene. For it has been described in the Vedanta, in the Vedic teaching, as well as in Bandila, that once upon a time there was a pristine, pure humanity, incapable of evil. They were of ethereal bodies. It is to them the first Zarathustra came as a pure being. And then Zarathustra Tamas, the seventh one by one teachers came, taking up the same light. But according to the cycle and the time for those seven races, he had to give out the teaching according to the time and the place. So the one of which we know historically, apparently, and there is a great dispute about that, is the author of the Gatha. The historically, this the Greeks, others would say it is about 3,000 or 4,000 years old. The others would say 6 to 12,000. There have been those who say 40 to 60,000 years earlier. But the first Zarathustra, about which nothing has been mentioned except a hint here and there. So, but the teacher of Parsi of today is the Zarathustra, who is the author of the Gatha. So now, during this dark cycle, it is in that Yasna 29, which is the next chapter, description is given as the cry of the Mother Earth. And Mother Earth is described as Gayushulvan, the soul of the earth, which is described as a cow, which weeps and cries out to the great forces, the spiritual celestial beings. He says, look at tremendous forces are weighing on my body. Mother Earth is saying, I am crying out because of so much of corruption that even I get been so heavily polluted that I am suffocated. And therefore out of that cry a response comes. And that is a conference of Avramasda and the Yajapas and Dhameshaspentas. And a little dialogue takes place, and out of which they chose Zarathustra as the authentic. And he is given the credentials, but no less than Avramasda himself, that go out into the world and do the needful. So then the Zarathustra, which is described as the Zarathustra, Zara means gold, Istara means a star, the one of the golden star who descends. We will not go into the life of that individual, but then he came at the time when there was tremendous idolatry going on. The whole Mazdiyasni din has been totally forgotten. Mazdiyasni means Mazda Yasni, the one worship of the one supreme reality. That has been given the best, forgotten totally. There were worships of the little minor gods, lot of idolatry, and more important, black magicians were thriving. And nothing, no less than the, among the police class. The black magicians were among the very priest class who were supposed to lead humanity. Athravan. The Athravan means one who is protectors of the fire, the inner fire. Instead of the protecting the inner fire, they were themselves were of the dark forces. So Zarathustra had to confront, and historically he had to confront many of those priests who contrived to go against him, and so on, a long history, you see. But then, as he said, it came as a mission in order to establish righteousness. And that is why throughout Zoroastrian tradition, a Zoroastrian is described as a warrior soul. That, and one of the symbol of that, the external symbol is the Shudra Kusti. During the initiation of the ceremony, the white shirt is put on, which represents the shield. The white color being the symbol of purity. And the kusti represents the girdle, like a warrior's girdle. And during the tying of this girdle, every Zoroastrian promises himself that he shall remain true to Bhumata, Ukhata, and Bhuvarastha, to the original Masriya's Nidin. And that he promises and he pledges his loyalty to the great commander, Zarathustra himself. That is, during the Udhav ceremony, every Zoroastrian child owes his allegiance to the one teacher, Zarathustra, he considers him as the commander. And with the result that he himself is a warrior in the army of the righteous ones. So this army concept is throughout. In other words, every individual has to be a warrior. And that is why even in Bhagavad Gita, Arjuna, the great Kshatriya, he is reminded in the very second chapter that you are a Kshatriya clan. How can you back out of a battlefield? For this is your dharma. This is the dharma sankat. You have come across a great tragedy of your religion, of a great duty. It is your duty now to fight. So your dharma represents spiritual duty when you are confronted with darkness in front of you. And you cannot turn back now. That is the message. But during this conversation, the very second chapter, Krishna also points out the two dual sides of man. That thou craves for that which need not be lamented. He says, all those people are going to die. What is the death? The death belongs to the lower part of man, which is awareness. But there is the permanent spark within every human soul, the literal spark, which is called the sun of Avramasya. The fire is supposed to be the sun of Avramasya. So in each human heart, it is that spark of unity, because we are all the children of one life, and therefore we are all one in our essential nature. And therefore brotherhood is a natural outcome if we accept that fact. So with this establishment to bring back righteousness, one must turn upwards. As we said, the heaven aspiring mind has to be brought in front. And that is what is called the Vahuman. And therefore in this shloka that we just read out, he says that dark is the mind which clings to the false, and brightly shines the mind which holds to truth. But then this do thou choose, and the unwise people go astray. So this righteousness and purity, unfortunately in later tradition, especially on account of the Vandidat was much, much later traditions during Sasanian period, much later, after the advent of Christ, because of the influence of Christianity and Judaism, that it has become a more a ritualistic practice. The ritual purity was emphasized. The yasnas or the yagnas are performed purely mechanically in order to invoke certain powers of nature and are still being carried on purely mechanically without understanding the depth and the spirit of ancient Zarathustra's teaching. So the Zarathustra himself had to confront those like powers, and that man has to be like an alert warrior if he is to fight the battle. Thus comes the doctrine of Asha, of the great, what is called the Dharma. Now the Asha has got various meanings. It has derived, It is at low level it is described because as purity, righteousness, integrity, life of holiness, and so on. But at a higher level, it has almost correspondence to Ritam, Rita, the holy order, what is known as the cosmic order of the universe. In the very universe, the first thing that comes into being, as we said, are the twin, who are so counterbalanced that it brings about the orderly manifestation of the universe. This orderliness, which is found in science, in every department of human life, because the universe is governed, it is a universe of law. The whole orderly universe of law has to be recognized first. But that is there at the cosmic level, which has its correspondence at the moral level. So that cosmic law and order, which is the Asha, has its Vedic use, the word Ritam, out of which the word Ratu is used in Zoroastrian great mantra. You see, we will go to the mantra also, it's a very, very useful Zoroastrian mantra, we'll go to the reading. Just as Sovereign Lord is all powerful, so also Ratu, the lawgiver, by virtue of his store of Asha. Then the second, that means this Mahamantra, whenever the very first, and by the way, this mantra was pre-Zoroastrian, because that language almost comes very close to Gathic language. The gift of superior mind, Vangyavushmanango it is called, is for the works done for the sake of the devotion for Mazda. And Aura's power, Shatra, descends on him who serves his brother's meek. So these three should be the foundation for the Zoroastrian yoga. Because the very first, Ratu, the one who is the lawgiver, is derived from the word Ritam, as we said, which corresponds to the Tao of the Zen Buddhism, the Dharma of the Vedic tradition, that which Dharma, which that which Dharma, that which holds everything together, that which supports human life or the cosmic life, and that law which maintains the whole evolutionary process. That rhythm, and the one holder of that rhythm, the whole is the purest of the pure. This is, by virtue of his store of Asha, he has become Ratu. Why has he been chosen? Because of his store of Asha, the store of virtue, the store of purity. The purest of the pure being, who has to descend. And that's why he is called Zarathustra, the golden star. So, in the second line, of course, the gift of the superior mind, it descends on the work done for the sake of devotion for Mazda. Now this works done as an act of offering. It's an act of offering to our Mazda. This works done for the sake of the devotion for Mazda, which has this correspondence in our Bhagavad Gita. We discovered this incidentally in that same chapter, in the 23rd verse. Krishna says the same thing, almost word by word. On page 34, all the actions of such a man, that is a holy man, who is free from self-interest, who is devoted with heart set upon spiritual knowledge, and whose acts are as sacrifices for the sake of the Supreme. You are sacrificing at the altar of the Supreme. They are dissolved and left without effect on him. So their acts are dissolved because he becomes a pure man, and on him descend spiritual knowledge. So spiritual knowledge is the outcome or the result of living a pure mind. So it is a pure mind is a receptive mind. A purified mind receives illumination. It is like a lake. When it is pure, clean, still, undisturbed by human emotions, becomes receptive to that light, reflects the light accurately. So the purity, therefore, is emphasizing order that it becomes the receptive vehicle for the higher receiving of the heart. And therefore, this superior mind, that Gandhavus Manango, is not the same as Bahumano. The Bahumano, the higher mind, is there in all of us, is the starting point. But one has to reach to that mind which is totally united with the Supreme Reality. That, as in Theosophical tradition we say, the manas conjoined with buddhi, with the buddhi-manasic mind, which is permanently united between together. And then now it is fully illumined with the light of buddhi upon it. So the light is again and again emphasized in the Zoroastrian tradition. And therefore in Zoroastrian ethics, we can, and another second line, that the gift of Shakti, the great power, comes to a man who serves humanity and serves his brothers meek, who are helpless, who are in need of help. And he gets Shakti or the spiritual powers in order that he can become more efficient to be able to help others. You see, it is not given freely. The spiritual power descends on man who is already pure, but then it is descends on a man who is worthy of receiving it, so that he can use it in the service of humanity. So the very first Aunava, the mantra which, as I said, predates of Sutra, sums up the old pre-Zoroastrian Mazdaism, which emphasizes Asha, which ordinarily as we call purity of the consciousness, and it is much more, to be in line with one's own higher nature. The law of our own being, it is not only the cosmic law, the law is inside of us also. It is the same law that governs us, the same law that inspires us to turn upwards. So that virtuous life, for the sake of the love of purity, brings this kind of wisdom, awakens in you. And therefore, in Zoroastrian ethics, what is good, this is the question most philosophers have questioned, what is good, fundamental? Good is that which is, as Mr. Kajal says very simply, which is pleasing to Ishwaravidhi. An act which pleases that. So as soon as you consult your inner Ishwara, the inner great teacher, silent and hidden behind you, if you consult that, you will find that it will be pleased. Do that action which is pleasing to you. Because then it will be in harmony with the law of the universe, with the law of our own human nature, which will not go against the law, even physiological and biological laws. At physiological levels, if naturally if you overeat or if you indulge, the body gets affected. Immediate action, reaction takes place. So that means the law, the supreme law, the law of cycle at one time, and the law of karma, which represents in Zoroastrian tradition, we come to that also later. So the ethics means to be at peace with himself and with the world. And with the world means not only humanity, but Mother Nature. And one important thing about Zoroastrianism is, apart from, it's not only the worship of Mother Nature, but actually reverence for life. And because of the reverence for life, one has to see to it that even air, water, fire, it should not be polluted. Now this is literally translated and gone at great length to preserve this purity. And therefore the external purity, taking bath and dur and that, is external from what we call the ritual purity. It's taken care of a very great, elaborate way in today's Zoroastrian practices, forgetting that the original spirit, that it is the pure magnetism. One has to preserve the inner magnetism. And the magnetic currents within, that is circulating within us, depends upon the quality of the life we lead, and that depends upon the quality of the thoughts we generate. So again, once again, the central concern is in the mind. The battlefield is in the mind. That it is turning towards the higher mind, consulting it again and again for every moment of our life, and then receiving that inspiration from that higher, and then acting. So the rules and ethics in that traditionally. But this goodness is purely as a preparation for living of a higher life. And whoever wants to live much higher than the pure ordinary religious life, a sacred life of an in, it's an inner life. But higher life is not an outward life of our outward practices. Actually it is a form of a sadhana to be undertaken. But the very basic, the very first foundation is purity. And therefore, the necessary preparation is required, and therefore the virtues are mentioned. Goodness, righteousness, virtuous life, etc., etc. But Kesavacharya says very nicely, etc., that each time you plant a flower of love and charity in your neighbor's garden, a loathsome weed disappears from your womb. Now here is another technique, that you take pains to make your environment, including fellow human being, of a rosy garden. Plant the flower of love and charity around you. If you generate this atmosphere of love around you, within you, first of all, and therefore you carry, wherever you carry that magnetism around you, then what will happen, somehow or other, that little evil that was left in you deserts you. The loathsome weed disappears of its own. Without making any effort fighting against the evil. You have to fight against the evil when you are confronting it. But sometimes there is a hidden evil. So the light of the spirit goes right deep into the darkest corner of our being and finds out those things of darkness which come to the surface during these tests and trials of life. And when they come to the surface, it is this light that burns it up. And therefore in Rudraksharanam, fire has been very greatly mentioned. In one of his last yasnas, how to pray, how to worship, Ratsusta mentioned, it is not that in your reading. Make thyself pure, O righteous man. Anyone can reach highest state of purity. I told you, no? Highest state of purity for himself. Anyone can reach highest state of purity by himself. And then he says, with good thoughts, words and acts. That is as a purifying process. In line with the inner moral law. That is from the Mandala. And therefore, later on he says that I myself have seen light, have been illumined because of this height of purity. And you also can do the same for yourself. So that he projects his own example before humanity, that purity is available and achievable to all men. And it is there in line with moral law. So the method of worship, he represents that pray, silence the mind, and before worship before the fire within you. And that fire is already there in you. We don't have to search for it. It is called the sign of Avramasda. Atas Putra Avramasda. And that divine spark is already lighted up within you, and that all you have to do is, it is covered over by confusions of consciousness, by our lower mind. All you have to do is purifying process. And in that process, where here and there we get the glimpses of the whisperings of the Buddha to the lower. So when we receive this inspiration, we must immediately act on those inspirations. It is only then that the mind responds. And the more you respond to the inner voice, the inner light that shines, occasional sparks come up, inspiration comes, intuitive flashes come, the inner voice speaks, conscience bites and tells you not to do this. Just as the higher voice speaks, do this, it is the right thing to do. When this thing happens, the inner fire glows. And it is described that it rejoices. It said that even heaven rejoices when a man turns righteous. So this vision of God in Yasna 45 Zarathustra mentions that he had that vision, came because he realized the method of prayer. But he says that you offer the hymns of devotion through, but then immediately says prepare yourself by offering good deeds. And that offering good deeds means through that fire, you don't have to take the sandalwood. And again, in Vandidat, the description is that you must go to fire with sandalwood in hand, which is pure, clean and dry. In other words, you offer yourself as a clean, pure and dry, the dry of the lower nature. Symbolic of an act of offering. So act of offering is the method of worship for Ramajda, and in so doing, more and more light comes to mankind. We shall end here, friends, before we take up your question, with the words of Deshpibi. Every thinking Parsi has to help himself. That is, he has to work hard to learn Zoroastrianism. If he would learn more, his own religion, which is not dead, yet dead, and under the present lifeless mask of modern practices of Zoroastrianism, the pulse of the Magi of old still beats. So maybe she saw already in 20 years the decadence in a community. So the present lifeless mask of modern practices, which is lifeless, the pulse of the Magi is there still. And you can find that if you go to the original teaching of the Zarathustra. So we can take up your questions now. You have just heard the question, friends, and we'll read this. All the religions, this shows the origin of religion. From the old Vedic, Zoroastrian and the Jewish creeds down right up to the modern Christianity, they all sprang from the one archaic Magianism, which is pre-Zarathustra's Mazda Yasnu Bhakti. Pre-Zarathustra. Or the ancient wisdom based upon knowledge of the occult nature. This knowledge of the occult nature is not available in public, which is available only to the intuitive mind. This writer of this Gatha, Niraj Tara Parwala, he writes that he took 10 years to write and rewrite this only 5 Gathas, consist of only 17 chapters. That he wrote and rewrote and wrote and corrected himself. And says every time, though he was double PhD in Avesta and in Sanskrit, a great scholar in languages, and he says language is not enough. We have to go behind the words and into the spirit of the word, into the soul of the word. And it is there he discovered the inner meaning. So that the archaic Magianism or the ancient Zoroastrian Mazdaism, see that Mazdi Asne Jarthostidin, the Zoroastrian that we are practicing, we say during our Navjot ceremony, during our Kushti ceremony, during this initiation ceremony, that I am Zoroastrian and a Mazdi Asne Zoroastrian. That is the worshipper of one Mazda, the one pure divine light. Because Mazda also means the Lord of Wisdom. Just as the Ahura is the Lord of Power, the Lord of Life. Mazda is the law of wisdom. So Mazdi Asni Deen is that deen which worships wisdom. So the original, which sprang from that archaic, archaic means prehistoric, absolutely forgotten. As you said, it appeared to the first race of humanity, the pure Zarathustra which appeared, which was in an ethereal form. And for the first 3 pure races, that influence continued until the man of mind was lighted up. In the fourth, in the middle of the third root race. And then, from that time onwards, the mind became dual, the higher mind and the lower.
As soon as the mind was lighted up, humanity became a conscious human being thinker.
So the Masiyasni Din is the rich Zoroastrian tradition, the pure teaching which is similar to this ancient doctrine, wisdom religion, out of which sprang all religions, as it is mentioned.
But then you have to go back, and the whole effort of theosophy is, and especially the very first book which HPB gave in that Isis Unveiled, she took great pains to subscribe to the second object of the theosophy movement, namely comparative study. She is trying to show that the essential truths in all religion is that same simple teaching about one divine principle of life, after which the great seven, we have not taken the doctrine of the seven Mahishaskanikas, the seven fundamental rays, and then the seven sub-rays, and the sub-rays, and the sub-rays, and the whole hierarchies which organize the whole cosmic universe. This cosmogony and cosmogenesis is parallel to that first gatha. So that Vajrayasni Din, as you would like to know, has to, is always forgotten. So that true Zoroastrianism is the Vajrayasni Din, which reaffirmed. It was forgotten. So Dratsusta became a reformer. He reformed it. He brought it back. He reminded people of his this old teaching and brought it back in a form in which the people of his time could understand and would appreciate. But as we just mentioned, that it gets degenerated when it becomes organized, and further when it spreads across, forms into cults and sub-cults, and a lot of interpolations and misinterpretation takes place. So we are now in a doldrum. Today the community is divided in plenty of controversies of various kinds, because this is more a political controversy, if you ask me, than a real substantial thing. I'm sorry, we have no time to ask. Answer further questions. No time, sorry. Thank you.